faith are all aspects of Vedic knowledge. Sambandham Abhideyam and Prayojanam. And we spoke on the first verse. Of course, many of you were here when I gave this talk a while back. And so some of it is a repetition. But repetition means absorption. So it's good to hear the same points over, because really each point has deeper and deeper principles that we can discuss and understand. The second verse is described by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose appearance day is tomorrow, as how one can realize his ineptitude to take up this chanting. Now, what are the, what we say, anarthas? This verse is the stage where our anartha nivrittis get removed, unwanted. Practically everything that is related to devotional service all deals with uncovering or revealing. So what we're doing is removing the anarthas, removing the baggage. Would you like to hear a brahmachari point? Okay, I'll give you a brahmachari point. You're walking along the street, and you're walking nice and freely, and you see a big, giant rock on the ground. So you put the rock, you pick it up, and you put it on your back, and you continue walking. That is called accepting married life. Prabhupada's statement. So if you want to walk fast, don't stop for any rocks. Alright, does that help? It's like picking up a load that's not necessary. Okay, back to the... Okay. Nam, the holy name, is the means and the ends. The second verse helps us to rid ourselves of those things that we don't need. When Lord Chaitanya says durdaivam, he says offenses, obstacles, or he say attachments. I want to chant Hare Krishna. Everything is given to me, the process, the principles. But somehow, because of other things, I can't. I don't have any taste, no taste for chanting. Why no taste? No attachment, no enthusiasm. I do it, it's mechanical, I do it because I'm supposed to. But that is not, that is still with remaining within the area of anartha nivrittis. There's some strong anarthas still covering the soul, attachments. So this verse is the way to get free, or this verse teaches us how to get over that. So Lord Chaitanya says there's no rules, there's no regulations. But yet, look how many rules and regulations. The books are full of them. Right? What is he saying? Is he just trying to give us some kind of false hope? No. Actually, the holy name is independent of all rules and regulations. But in order to approach the holy name, one has to be able to be You have to, you're approaching the holy name, you're approaching Krishna. So in the same one sense, one has to have the qualities to approach the Lord. So one must cultivate a type of bhakti, a mood of bhakti that is conducive to chanting. And one must get rid of certain, how we say, attachments and arthas, offenses, which are obstacles in making us, in making it easy for us to approach the holy name. The holy name is merciful, the holy name is independent. If you offend Krishna, the only way you can get freed from offending Krishna is chant Krishna's name. There's no other way. The name is the greatest mercy. It frees you from offenses to the Lord. So when one is engaging in offenses in devotional service, chant the name. The name can remove the offenses or the reactions to the, except Vaishnava Aparan. That's the only thing the name can't relieve you from. That offense, you have to go to the Vaishnava, beg forgiveness, and actually be sorry and ask for service. And the name can't free you from that. It's the only thing the name can't do. It can free you from offenses to bhakti, and from offenses to the Dham, from offenses from the Lord. But Vaishnava Aparad, it can't free you from that. That's the, how serious Vaishnava Aparad is. So you have to be very, very careful in the association of devotees in order not to commit Vaishnava Aparad. If you offend Krishna, and if you chant the holy name, and then the name can relieve you of the offenses. In this verse, Lord Chaitanya says, there's millions of names. Krishna, Govinda, so many names, right? But then actually there's two aspects or categories of names. Not all the names are equal. There are first primary names, there are secondary names. Primary names are the names that directly deal with the Lord, His pastimes, His qualities, His activities, His, what we say, nature, His devotees. And the secondary names deal with His function within the material world, such as Brahman, Paramatma, Ishwara, Parameshwara, what else? God, Super Soul. The aspects of the Lord which are meant for carrying out material functions. So if you chant those names, you cannot get the full mercy of the name through those names. So Yasomati Nandana, Nanda Nandana, what else? Yasoda Nandana, Gopi Jana Vallabha, these are all primary names of the Lord. But, and we can chant these names, but of course, Lord Chaitanya chanted Hare Krishna. So in order to be, what we say, chaste to our parampara and obedient to the principle of chanting, we chant Hare Krishna. It's the Maha Mantra also. And I was just recently in one city in America, and I was speaking really enthusiastic about the holy name. I was just really feeling some mercy. Most of the people in the temple were of the Indian nationality, and two people objected. Why only Krishna? Why not chant, you know, Narayan, or you know, Ram, or Lakshmi, or you know, so many other names. I said, yeah, it's alright, you can chant those names too. But Lord Chaitanya has given special, what we say, focus. He's made that mantra the power with of all mantras. And when the Lord does that, we have to accept. If He wants to make something primary, you can't say, well, the scriptures say something else. You know, the scriptures give, you know, so many concessions, so many aspects for chanting. The Lord Chaitanya has focused on the Maha Mantra. And actually, Goloka Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. This, he's not simply making this up or just trying to focus on this for some his own reason. Actually, it's the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is Radha and Krishna, which is the supreme aspect of the Absolute Truth. Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Radha Sham, Radha Sham, Sham Sham, Radha. Don't chant that, but this is actually in Vrindavan, they chant that, because actually that is the deeper loving aspects of this mantra. But we can also understand that, but we follow Lord Chaitanya and chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. Now Ram can refer to Lord Ramachandra, can refer to Lord Balaram, can also refer to Parasuram, but can also refer to Raman, Radhika Raman. For the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the whole mantra actually is Radha and Krishna. And the second part is Raman, meaning the lover of Radharani, Radhika Raman. So you can choose what aspect of the name Rama you want to. Because I've been confronted with this question, what does Ram mean? I said, it's Ramchandra, or Balaram, or, Radhika Raman. You can, whatever you focus on. Because the name is the name. But for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it's Radhika Raman. Of course, Balaram is there too. Revati Raman. So this holy name is—it's the means. But therefore, we have to qualify the chant. Although there is no rules and regulations, still we have to have some. What we say. First of all, we have to have some enthusiasm in the chant. We have to be eager to chant. Like that. That eagerness. Like, if somehow or other we can't focus on chanting for some reason, because of some service, we should think, oh, I have to chant my rounds. When am I going to chant my rounds? I didn't get my rounds done today. I have to chant. Not like, it's okay, I'll chant later. Tomorrow I can make them up. And that means, really, you don't have no taste for it. Really, satatam kirtayantam om, chant all the time. Chanting means all the time. It doesn't mean just 16 rounds. Prabhupada says, when you're actually chanting Hare Krishna, he'll say, 16 rounds? Why 16? 16,000. 16 million? Why should I stop at 16? He says, this is chanting. That means you've developed such a taste for chanting that you think, wow, why do I have to stop at 16? Yeah. So that is an indication that we're actually getting the mercy of tasting the holy name. The name is like that. It's so sweet. People like things that are sweet. Things are sublime. Things that are powerful. Things that are, what we say, auspicious. The name has all these qualities. No rules, no regulations, no places. You can chant any place, anytime, anywhere. Hundreds and millions of names. But still, although all the regulations have been relaxed and relieved, still I don't have any taste. Why? I commit offenses to revive them. So one has to be very careful. And what is the worst of all material desires? Even if you get rid of all of offenses, say you're chanting offenseless, there's another thing that is very, very, how we say, insidious. It destroys, how we say, advanced devotees. Thinking oneself as the supreme. Yeah, but before that. That's one word. Huh? Pride? Yeah, but what is the result of pride? One is... After the offenses are gone. Bhakti Siddhanta really smashes this. He said this is the worst of all material desires. Ha! What'd you say? Pratishtha. Yeah. Wanting to be famous. Right? You see, so many great devotees. They become guru. They ride on elephants. They have bands chanting their names, you know. Pratishtha. Want to become famous. Famous as guru. And then, when they get tired of that, then they want to become God. That pratishtha leads to that other one. Actually, I'm an incarnation. You didn't know that. Incarnation of a cockroach, maybe, but... Yeah, it's like when you get to that certain stage of really performing austerities, chanting, learning the scriptures, preaching, and becoming having followers, janam, so many things. And then what happens? I'm God. Yeah. Even in Krishna consciousness society, it happens. Don't think. Yeah. Prabhupada was very aware how, when one makes advancement, how these things can creep in. As long as there's some motivation left, then one will adopt some aspect of material, what we say, contamination. And this pratishtha is the worst. Wanting to become noticed as a great soul. How to get over that? Serve Vaishnavas. Do some menial service. Clean pots. Even if you're a guru, clean the floor. Yeah, it helps. Simple menial service is very healthy. Sometimes I think, I'm a pujari. Huh? Pujari. I'm so close to Krishna. Yeah, a flea is also close to the elephant. But does the elephant even notice the flea? No, it's just like insignificant. So, it's good menial service is very healthy for everyone. Even sannyasis, gurus, incarnations. Very healthy. It's good. It's very nice. Clean floors, clean pots. Brush the shoes of the devotees. Clean the mud off their shoes. It's nice. It's helpful. It keeps us aware of our position, you know. So this pratishtha is the worst. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that this Dordaivam, or offenses, can be, what we say, corrected through attentive chanting. Attentive chanting can correct offenses. This is the way to do it. Where should we put our attention? On trying to chant attentively. That means when you're chanting your japa, do whatever you have to do to remain attentive. It's important. Always be conscious whether I'm hearing nicely and I'm chanting properly. Don't, if we fall into a state of sleep, or if we fall into a, just a state of the mind just going everywhere, catch that. Bring it back. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, wherever and whenever the mind wanders, just bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. This attentive chanting gives us a taste. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, attentive chanting diminishes the possibilities of committing offenses. If you're committing offenses, you want to reduce the tendency, work on attentive chanting. This is the positive aspect of it. Sometimes we have a lot of service. Sometimes we have to fit our rounds in different places. Still, even if you have to fit them in because of some reason, chant attentively. It's important. This attentive chanting is important. Because you won't develop a taste for chanting unless you chant attentively. Because once you start chanting attentively, then the sweetness of the name comes. And when that sweetness comes, then one becomes eager to chant more and more. The holy name appears when the environment is favorable. If the environment is unfavorable, it doesn't appear. In other words, if our bhakti is not right, it won't appear. The name appears in a favorable environment. The Vedas, the scriptures point that the ultimate principle for God realization is raso vaisa. What is raso vaisa? Yeah. So in the holy name is the manifestation of the absolute truth. And therefore, it is the reservoir of all rasas. We want that ras taste. We can go on in Krishna consciousness without taste for some time. But after a while, it becomes difficult. We have to taste the sweetness. Krishna consciousness is sweet. The holy name is sweet. Even austerity is sweet. When we're actually performing it in the proper mood. So that ras. Nam smarnam, I'll read some points. Nam smarnam is accessible by all, whereas other processes require a kind of sukriti. Other processes you have to have some qualification, but nam smarnam, remembering nam, is available to everyone. Foremost names are those, of course we meant that, the names that are foremost are names that refer to nam, rupa, guna, and lila, as opposed to the secondary names. The Vedas inform us that every word indicating an object or power is first and foremost a name of God. And you wonder why Lord Chaitanya was, when he came back from Gaya after initiation, he was still Nimai Pandit, and he was teaching his students based on the principle that all verbs, all adjectives, all words, ultimately, are related and mean Krishna. And it's a fact. It's not like it's some, he was just, you know, fanatic. Students thought he was a fanatic, but actually he had the realization. So it is explained that every word indicating an object or power, something that is supreme, is first and foremost the name of God. Mahaprabhu shows how every sound indicates God, and secondly, the specific object or the energy. It indicates God or a specific object. Actually, Prabhupada said everything is God. Of course, the Mayavadis or the impersonalists say everything is God too. But there is what we say God and God's energy. But then again, energy also cannot be disconnected from the source. Therefore, the energy in one sense is also identical with the object or the source. So, in the same way, I mean, just like there are a class of philosophers who say, what is that called? There's a term. It's mentioned in the where they say everything is God. No, it's a yeah, that's the statement. But actually, there is a type of philosophy. Pantheism, yeah. Pantheism, everything's God. And Prabhupada said this is good, but ultimately it's incomplete. Everything is, one sense, God. Because there's no difference between the source and the energy. But then again, for the sake of distinction, and for the sake of loving exchange, there has to be a distinction made. Therefore, God and God's energy. Otherwise, there's no relationship. If everything's God, then I'll just have relationship with myself. If I'm God. That doesn't work. That's why materialists, impersonalists, they fall down to the material world again after attaining liberation. Why? Because there's no ras, no juice, no loving exchange. It has to be that loving exchange is there. Therefore, we make a distinction. Everything is God and not God simultaneously. Everything is God and not God simultaneously. So how can we conceive that something is something and nothing opposite at the same time and both are true? Can you figure? Huh? It's a chintya, yeah. It means that it's inconceivable. But is it always inconceivable? No. Because when you realize it, then you conceive it. But realization comes not through philosophical or intellectual speculation. It comes by realization. It's come when the Lord gives you that knowledge. He'll give it to you. He'll enlighten you with transcendental knowledge about the nature of the absolute truth. He gives you enlightenment. So therefore you realize things that are, what we say, beyond the range of the senses or inconceivable. And the realization comes not simply by, you know, it comes by the mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is pleased, or when one attains a certain stage of bhakti, Krishna blesses you with knowledge. That's why, although we say everything is available, still there's so much more to learn. You can never, there's not like all transcendental knowledge has been revealed. No, it's still being revealed. More and more as time goes on. Therefore, there can be more and more realizations of the absolute truth, of the nature of the absolute truth. We can write another billion books. Because that's the unlimited nature of the absolute truth. And it comes by the realization of the great souls. What is that saying? Starko Patishta Sutinam Vibinnam. Ah. Vasal Visham. Dharmasya tattva vidhayas mahajano yena katasapanda. That's the last line. That the truth of religious principles are hidden in the hearts of the self-realized souls. Truth of religious principles are hidden in the hearts of realized souls because they have understand it by their own practice of bhakti. That's why if two great souls are arguing, one should not take the side of one or the other. Because one will be condemned. Because both are right, although they're arguing. The absolute truth is so broad that two people can be different and both be right. You ever see in our Krishna Consciousness Society, everyone says, it's like this, and that's the way it is. Maybe. But there are, there's certain principles that are like that. But realizations, and what we say, Krishna gives inspirations on how to spread Krishna consciousness. It's not limited. Krishna gives realizations about his own nature, which apparently has never been revealed before. We have the dogmatic pragmatists, right? Those who see everything as the literal interpretation of the scriptures. Oh, how can I interpret the scriptures other than what is being said? Yes, you should approach it like that. But through revelation, those same literal interpretations have deeper meanings, which are not revealed simply by the literal explanations. Oh, that's a fact. But you can't jump up to that level. Can't jump up to it. And this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. And it's all revealed through the name like that. So this second verse kicks out all those, what we say, anarthas. And how do you do that? Attentive chanting. Work on it. Work on it. Work on it. Work on it. Try to chant attentively. Sit down when you're chanting. Just absorb yourself in that name. Do whatever you have to do to chant attentively. If you want to be a fanatic, some people like to be fanatics. Be a fanatic about your japa. Yeah. To be a fanatic for the right thing is good. To be a fanatic for the wrong thing is fanatic. Be a fanatic for chanting, especially japa. It's important. The strength of your spiritual practice will be maintained and developed through the chanting of the holy name. Maintain and develop. As soon as you become weak in that area, you will become weak in other areas also. Your relationships with Vaishnavas, your enthusiasm and your ability to understand philosophy, all will become affected as soon as you become weak in your chanting or lax in your chanting. Chant with attention. There's three forms of inattention. We spoke a little bit about this morning with the college students. It's called Vikshepa, Audakshina, and Jadya. Vikshepa means distraction. Audakshina means apathy. Jadya means sleep. Wow. Distraction, I'm chanting but I'm thinking about what I have to do later. I'm thinking, so many material things coming. What's for prasadam? Who's coming in? Who's walking out? What I did yesterday? What I'll do today? So many things. Even if you got ideas while you're chanting, sometimes you're chanting and you get an idea about service, keep a piece of paper there. Write it down. Forget about it. Then you pick it up later after your japa. You get some good idea while you're chanting. Don't try to get ideas while you're chanting. Don't do that. Yesterday I was thinking, sitting in the car, I was thinking, what do I have to remember in my devotional service, the certain things I need to remember as far as, I'm in Pune now, I have to remember certain things to do. And I was thinking, this is not right, I'll just chant. And if Krishna helps me to remember something, it'll happen. So I was just chanting and then a thought came, oh, yeah, that's right. So if you just focus on the Holy Name reveals everything. You don't have to... Yeah. You get ideas, you get inspirations, you get enthusiasm. In other words, Krishna fulfills your needs through the Holy Name. So work on attentive chanting. And try to stop the offenses. It's hard to become attentive if we're still committing offenses. Learn the 10 offenses, avoid the 10 offenses. Third verse, Trinadapi Sanichena Tayoriva Sahishnuna Manina Mamanadena Kirtiniya Tadahi. Mahaprabhu has said that this is the essence of his instructions. Sadhana, sadhya, tattva. It's the sadhana, it's the goal, it's the truth. These traits seem impossible to develop, but they are the requirements for the results of Krishna Nam. One has to cultivate these qualities: humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for others. It's important. To give respects to everyone is very difficult because some people are not respectable. But we respect not them, but the super soul within the heart of the living entity. In the heart of all living entities, Krishna is there. So when you're offering respects to a living being, you're actually respecting Krishna in the heart. When you commit an offense to a person, you're disturbing Krishna in the heart within that person. That same Krishna who's in your heart is being disturbed in another person's heart. Yeah. And because that person is being offended or not being respected properly. So, therefore, we can give respects to all, but in the proper way, according to position, according to relationship. Never demand respect for yourself. If you want respect, then you live in a very, very unhappy life if you're looking for respect. Because when you don't get it, you become upset. Everyone's respecting me, but this person is not. Why not? What's wrong with him? Don't you see the rest of them are respecting me? What's wrong with you? And that's a problem. False ego. If someone doesn't respect you, you should feel happy. And if someone does, you can also feel happy, but not in the wrong way, in the right way. That actually they're respecting the Lord within the heart. But if you don't get respect, then ultimately you aren't supposed to. The principle of simplicity means to live without expectations. Simplicity means to live without expectations. If you have expectations from others or from the environment in general, then it's hard to become humble, it's hard to become simple. It's actually opposite. So we have to live without expectations. And we give respect to others. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kandambini states, karmic anarthas are destroyed on the platform of Nishta. So this third verse is the Nishta platform. When one cultivates these qualities, you're destroying all your anarthas. This is the way to execute bhakti in this mood means that the anarthas are really going fast now. This is the mood. On the platform of ashakti, which is, of course, the higher stages, all the anarthas are destroyed. This verse gives clarity of vision in one life. Pride, false ego, intolerance. It's very difficult to become tolerant. I mean, culturally wise, people who are brought up in India have a greater degree of tolerance than people in the West. Because the people in the West, because the material conditions are more difficult. So they've learned to deal with that and developed a sense of tolerance. But in the West, we grow up with having so many material things available, and then when they're not available or something, some difficulties are there, we become less tolerant or intolerant. But even now, we can become intolerant, even though we also... Sometimes when we perform austerities, we deny ourselves so many things. And then we, where our spiritual life is, what we say, tight. We're running on a very tight string. And someone comes along and just says something, and our string just snaps, right? Right? You're performing so many austerities, and all of a sudden, somebody comes along and just makes it worse. You just want to get out of here. Right? You want to snap at them, right? Say something negative. But we also have to be tolerant. Riding on Indian trains, I learned to become tolerant. Difficult. It's really difficult. Tolerant. I mean, for you, it's easy. Some of you even like it. But it's hard sometimes. Being around materialistic people, oh, very difficult. But we have to be tolerant. Tolerant, tolerant, tolerant. The best way to become tolerant is always remember Krishna. Try to see Krishna in everything. Actually, when one is put in a situation where one has to become tolerant, and one accepts that, then that will help one in their chanting. When you're forced to become tolerant, then it actually helps you to chant the holy name. Tolerant, you know, to be put in a position of difficulty means that we can actually cry out or chant the holy name with more feeling, with more devotion. Nishta, oh, let me see. Theoretical knowledge generally fosters pride, whereas wisdom fosters humility. In other words, we want to bring our knowledge from the stage of theory to the stage of realization. If we have theoretical knowledge, we tend to think that we know things. But you can forget that as fast as you learn it. But those things that have come by way of what we say bhakti are born of experiences and realizations in devotional service. Those things are actually what we say wisdom, or what we say intuitive. That really helps to develop the qualities of humility, tolerance, pridelessness. That goes deeper. Whereas, you know, those who have a lot of knowledge, philosophical knowledge, they tend to be proud. You see, you meet people from other religious traditions, that they have some knowledge, they're proud. They have some austerity, they're proud. Many of them. Austerity can make you hard-hearted and prideful. Knowledge can make you also, what we say, less tolerant and also proud. But all these things take away from our relationship with Krishna. So one has to cultivate real humility based on our position. So this platform of nishta, there's two kinds of nishta. One born of constant chanting, and B, humility that is favorable to bhakti. Nishta has two things. Born of constant chanting, bhakti, and humility, which is favorable to bhakti. This verse contains both types of nishta. Both types of nishta, or one is fixed, born of constant chanting, and one cultivation of humility. Humility comes close to direct bhakti because it attracts Krishna Nam. Humility is such a wonderful quality that it's almost as good as bhakti itself. It's a feature of bhakti, but it's actually, in one sense, bhakti. Humility is such a high quality. It attracts the attention of the Lord and the holy name. When one is humble, one can actually taste the happiness of Krishna consciousness. It attracts Krishna Nam. Now, and not that it that allows us to approach Krishna Nam, it does that, but it also attracts Krishna Nam. Krishna is attracted by humility in the devotee. Krishna is all attractive. He's Atmarama, but he's also attracted by devotion. And the quality of devotion that is most pleasing is humility. What is humility, anyway? Srila Prabhupada has given some definitions, but there are a few. The one he mentions in the Gita is that humility is not wanting the distinction to be honored by others. I don't want to be honored. I really don't want to be honored. That's humility. Humility means Krishna is great and I'm small. Humility means I can do anything by the mercy of Krishna, and without the mercy of Krishna, I can't do anything. These are features of humility. Humility means that I'm in my proper position. I'm 1/10,000 the size of the tip of the hair. I'm pretty small. My existence is real small. And although I'm of the spiritual nature, still I'm overcome by the material nature. Always bewildered, always making mistakes. Right? When we do something great or something noteworthy by others' estimations, then we start to feel a little pride. It's natural, but it's natural materially, but it's artificial spiritually. Humility arises from the mind when it contrasts Krishna's mercy. Humility arising from the mind when it contrasts Krishna's mercy with one resistance to it. Did that make sense? Humility arising from the mind when it contrasts Krishna's mercy with one's resistance to it. Does that make sense? Humility arising from the mind when it contrasts Krishna's mercy with one's resistance to it. I have to check my notes on this one. When Miss Krishna's mercy, as one is resistant to Krishna's mercy, can't figure it out.
And then one is resistance to see that it's Krishna's mercy coming to me. I'm resistant and I don't want to surrender, I don't want to surrender. And after that one realizes, see, I'm such a fallen soul that even though Krishna is giving me mercy through this, I'm not able to do it. So I'm still a fallen person. Like that, humility can come. Means
yeah.
One can learn by mistakes.
Yeah, good, very good. Very good. When one is becomes resistant to Krishna's mercy, but then one, you know, seeing that it's actually Krishna's mercy, that humility is coming from the mind. except to the mercy, yeah. Even if it's put into a difficult situation, one is trying to resist it. Ultimately, it's Krishna's mercy. It's the mind just resisting the mercy, because it cannot understand why things are happening the way it is. It should happen differently, or this is too hard for me to accept. But in Krishna consciousness, everything is auspicious or beneficial, because what may be difficult or seem to be reversible at one point in a higher stage is always has a meaning. For example, trying to think of a good example. You know, temple president may tell you, okay, don't do this service today, do this service. Changes your service for some reason. And you ask why, well, I just need you to do this service today. And so you resist at first, even mentally. But then after a while you accept, and then you see, oh, after accepting, Krishna was trying to teach me something through this. Just by doing it, you get certain realizations. You can't see it at first. Why is this happening? Why am I service being changed? One's resistant for some reason. One example. Read some more. Let me read a couple more. Full and complete humility comes from the soul. It is a result of spiritual advancement. Humility arises out of realization of one's finite nature. Humility arises out of one's remorse because of attachment to sense gratification. I'm sorry, I've been so attached to sense gratification. One can actually feel remorseful. Humility that appears in one who has something to be proud of. Mahaprabhu glorified Rupa and Sanata in this regard. Although they were glorified, still they remained humble. Okay, questions. This is the first question. Question? Okay. Question. Sikshastika verse number 2 says that the Lord has many names, and each name the Lord has invested all his energies. But at the same time, it also said by Lord Shiva that 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu equals one name of Lord Rama, and 3 times names of Lord Rama equals one name of Krishna. So it appears to be apparently contradictory. How can we understand this? In the Krishna name, there are certain characteristics and qualities. Just like in the manifestation of Krishna, there are, what we say, within the higher aspects of the Lord's qualities, he has 4 distinct qualities. Surrounded by loving devotees, plays on his flute, has a beautiful bodily feature, and what's the other one? Has unique pastimes. These are exclusively relegated to Lord Krishna. Narayan has up to 60 of the qualities, but not the last 4. So within the within the name of Krishna, all the manifestations of Krishna are there, but they're not apparent in the other. But absolute is absolute. Lord Ram's name is absolute. Lord Vishnu's name is absolute. Lord Krishna's name is an absolute. So absolute times absolute equals absolute. But certain characteristics and qualities of the Krishna name are found exclusively there, such as his leelas. So that's the distinction, really. But it doesn't make the name less powerful. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan Nana Vavatara Akarona Kintu Krishna Swayam Savabhava Paramam Namam Yo Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan Nama, these are all names. They're all names of the Supreme Lord, and they're fully spiritually potent. But in the Krishna name, the leelas are there. Krishna leela. Well, really, to understand that statement completely is very difficult to understand. If you chant 1,000 names of Vishnu, it equals one name of Ram. Chant three names of Ram, it's equal to one name of Krishna. So you might say, well, okay, I have a secret. I'll just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Why even bother with Ram? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Get more out of chanting Krishna, right? Just chant Krishna. Good idea? No. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya gave the formula. And there's question two here, but go ahead.
You were telling about different names. So, as one of the name of the Lord, it liberates, like
Mukunda.
No, chanting of Lord's name leads to liberation. One chants the name of the Lord, like Ajami chanting, liberates. So, is it reference to only the primary name or secondary name also?
Bhakti, the process of bhakti is on the platform of liberation. When you're engaged in bhakti, you're already liberated. So when you chant the names of the Lord, actually, which is the feature of bhakti, that is freeing oneself from the material energy. What is that? Chaito Darpanam Arjuna Bhava Mahadevagni Nirvapanam. What does liberation mean? It means freedom from material suffering, ultimately. So that comes not by the primary names, but by the second. I mean by the not by the secondary names, but by the primary names. We don't chant the secondary names. They really can't bring us to chant God, 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 or Ishwar, 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 Brahman, Brahman, Brahman. I think it's, I don't know exactly, I've never read anywhere exactly what the effects of chanting the secondary names. But liberation is a byproduct of bhakti. It follows, just like the maidservants follow the wife wherever she goes. So bhakti is the main feature. So karma and, or mukti and bhakti follow bhakti. So the primary names are the names of bhakti, not the secondary names. These are not features of bhakti. These are features of, to indicate the Lord as his functions. Anyone could say these names. I mean, if you say these names, they can help you remember the nature. They can help you remember God. But God is the controller. He is the power within the universe. He is all-pervading. Like that, but ultimately, they're not features of bhakti. They're just principles of designating the Lord's activities as a function in the material energy. So we don't chant these names as a principle. So liberation comes by bhakti, and bhakti comes by chanting the primary names. Okay. Yes. Right here. Oh. No? Okay.
What
Maharaj, some practical tips for attentive chanting in your own personal chanting? Using some practical
tips? Through my own experiences. If you close your eyes, your mind will think of things. If you keep your eyes wide open, you'll see everything around you. Therefore, the yogis have half-closed eyes. It's a personal thing. If you close your eyes, then the mind jumps in with thoughts. If you open your eyes, what happens? Or you get sleepy. If you open your eyes, you see too many things around you. And then as soon as you see something, you may think of the thought in relationship to that object. So keep half-open eyes, like the yogis. That way you're really not seeing anything, but at the same time your eyes are not closed. That's a practical tip. That one's for Radhe Shyam. Huh? That's a good one. Yeah, and this is a realization through someone else's realization, but since that realization has been conveyed to me, it helps me also. If you walk around, sometimes we walk around in order to keep the energy of the body moving, keep the mind alert. But it's more likely to become distracted when you're walking than it is when you're sitting. So if you can somehow or other learn to sit, I think it's better than walking. But don't sleep. Practical things. Prayer. Offer some prayer before you. Chant the six Shastakam prayers. The other day I was driving in the car. I had to leave early and I had to begin my rounds while driving. And I couldn't chant clearly. So I started chanting the Sringa Mantras. I chanted the Sringa Mantras for a few minutes. And then my japa became very attentive. Prabhupada said the chanting of the other mantras helps us to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Chant Brahma Samhita prayers. They'll help you chant Hare Krishna. Chant other prayers. Chant these mantras, Sanskrit mantras. Chanting of mantras helps chanting of the Hare Krishna prayer. Not that they are absolute, but they'll help. They can help. What else? Some other practical things. Well, in general, not that I practice them, in general, looking at a picture of Krishna. I saw one devotee who was sitting in the garden out here yesterday. I came out in the afternoon. He was sitting there chanting japa. He had a picture of Krishna and a picture of Panchatattva right in front of him. And he was chanting japa, and I was thinking, that's good. Chant where there's least amount of distraction, and where the environment is conducive, or make the environment conducive. Chant early. To me, that's the most important principle of chanting. Get up early, chant early. Of course, if you go to bed late, it's hard because you're tired. But don't go to bed late unless you have to stay out and preach. Don't stay up unnecessarily. Take rest and get up early. And Naranjana Swami, I spent a month with him, and he really helped me in my japa because he was taking rest at 8:30 every night and getting up at 2:30. He was on a real strict sadhana program. 8:30 and getting up at 2:30, and he was chanting 32 rounds straight. Straight. Every day, 32 rounds straight. That's not easy. But, he really inspired me in my own chanting, getting up early. Our problem is we go to bed late and we get up early and we're tired. Right? Take rest by 10 if you can. unless you're out preaching. Otherwise, if you're here in the temple, there's no reason to stay up late. Prabhupada also said, every round you chant before Mangal Arati is worth four rounds after Mangal Arati. That's a statement by Prabhupada. And Radhanath Maharaj used to repeat that many times. The rounds you chant before Mangal Arati are really the best rounds. They're the supremo rounds. Yeah.
He had a deity also with him. He was traveling to some places. He came to Pune. So before Mangal Arati, he would finish all his rounds. No, 20-25 rounds he would chant for Mangal Arati. Get up at 2 o'clock. And then he would attend the Mangal Arati, National Arati, Tulasi Arati. When we all began chanting, he would go back to the room for worshipping the deity. You know. So I had told him that, you know, no, you should be with all the devotees chanting. You know. Otherwise, it's not a good example for others. So many of us, we also have the same problem. Because if we get up early and chant, you know, all the rounds we can chant also. And then during chanting time, if you're not there, then others get discouraged. Some of our devotees, they chant also many rounds before Mangal Arati.
So, I mean, I would say chant at least a few rounds before Mangal Arati. That's my experience. You want my personal realizations. If I chant four rounds before Mangal Arati, I feel like my days is successful in that sense. But if I just wake up, you know, and then I'm samsara da ba da, I'm still waking up. And then Jaya Prabhupada Nittai Gaur Hari Bho Jayom Vishnupada, and then I'm waking up, Jayom Vishnupada, and I'm finally awake. The holy name kicks the mind and kicks the senses into gear in the right way. I mean, Mangal Arati is there too, and it's enthusiastic. But I don't know. My nature is, I like to get up and chant. That's the first thing I like to do. The idea of getting up and going to Mangal Arati without chanting. I mean, I do it. I've done it for years, but I feel more happy when I can chant a few rounds, then go to Mangal Arati. Then I feel like I'm ready for Mangal Arati. That's my experience. But you should listen to Radhe Shyam. Prabhu. Not that you chant 16 rounds before Mangal Arati. If you chant 4 rounds, you're still there for 12 rounds. That's good enough. Even if you chant 2 rounds, you're there for 14 rounds. Get your rounds done before greeting of the deities. But don't just try to get them done. Because that's another pitfall of performing austerities. We just want to get things done. Still, keep the mood of devotion proper. Even though you're performing some austerity of chanting earlier, it's not that we have to finish, and that's the success. We have to have, we should take the time to also cultivate the proper devotion when we chant, even though we're getting up early.
About respect, and sometimes some people respect, some don't. And I mean, in general, for our services, say if you're going for a preaching program, and there, say, people are attentive, then naturally our service can be more effective. In some other places, people are not so attentive or so respectful, and they can't take the message seriously.
Yeah, that's
true.
And
this principle applies in every service.
Kaladesha
Patra. The subordinates don't expect the superior to the service. The superior cannot do his service properly. So then when we say that if others don't respect us, we should be happy. How can we be happy if our service is repeated? Like that.
You shouldn't expect respect, but it helps. It can help us to reciprocate. The idea of getting respect is a feature of reciprocation. Because when good energy comes back. But we have to be above that too. That even though it's not ideal or maybe getting less respect, still we may have to give, but we're not inclined to, we're not able to give as much as we can give. When reciprocation is there, then bhakti flows even greater. When people are eager and are enthusiastic and are in the proper mood, then the speaker and the hearer are both gaining. But the speaker is actually speaking on behalf of those who are hearing. So the more they're eager and the more they're giving both attention and respect, the more they're going to get out of it, because Krishna is going to inspire that speaker to open up even more and more. But when the audience is just there with no respect, or just there because they have to be, sometimes, you know, we see that in some of our temples in America. People come to class because they have to. If they had a choice, they wouldn't be there. And this is a fact. So then the speaker really can't put out as much as could be. So, yeah, but still, the speaker should be somewhat above that to some degree. But at the same time, just like I had that problem. I have that problem in certain places. So I asked Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, what should I do? I'm giving these classes and really, nobody's really interested. He said, use it as an opportunity to practice your preaching. You can just practice, you know. So he gave me a kind of a concession answer, but it was good. So now when I go into that area and I just, nobody's really interested, but I should just practice anyway. So you can think about it in that way, which just helps you really to give the class. It's like before you go into the fighting match, you have to go into it like a practice match. So you're just kind of like getting ready for the real stuff.
Guraidu's question. God, all names of God be equal. Sometimes in interfaith programs we tell that chant the name of God according to your tradition.
Yeah.
So now, that means the names of God, say like Allah or Jehovah, they are not, although they are secondary names.
Some of them, yeah.
And then say, the secondary names which are there in say, Vedic tradition, like Paramatma or Ishwar, are they equipotent?
Equal?
Are they equal, the secondary names in the Vedic tradition, the secondary names in the other
traditions? Yeah, because tradition is not the dividing line, it's the categories of names. You have to see what the name means. Allah means the Great One. It refers to God as the greatest, or the most powerful. It's still a feature of His... It's more like His... omniscient, nature of omniscience, He's all powerful. But the names that, it doesn't fit into Nama Rupa Gina Guna Lila. Those are the primary names. Those things that are Rupa, Guna, and Lila. Those are the primary names. And, you know, Jehovah. Someone asks Prabhupada, what does Jehovah mean? Baba said, I don't know. You know better than I do. And Wankan Tanka, the Native American Indians, the name they call God, Wankan Tanka. Wankan Tankan. Wankan Tankan. Means the Great Spirit. He is the Great Spirit. And so it indicates names of His position as being above everything. But it doesn't really go into qualities. Because how can you have affection for a great spirit? you have affection for, you know, Krishna as Bal Krishna, you know. When Krishna is, unless the personality, and personality means qualities, you can't take away qualities from personality. And if you just have qualities without personality, and then, you know, love. Oh, love. Love means what? Nobody can define it. Well, when it's related to Krishna, then it has a definite meaning and definition. Love means personal. You know, goodness, kindness. You know, even a person can be kind, but still they can be a low-class person. So when the names are referred to Krishna in his Nama Rupa Guna Lila, then they're primary names. So even within the other traditions, there are some primary names, but generally they're hard to find. Yes.
Different levels of remembrance of Krishna have different levels of purification associated with them. For example, say, we remember a shloka of the Bhagavad Gita, or we remember a Vaishnava song where there is direct reference to Krishna's pastimes, or we remember, say, Vishnu Sahasranam, which is more about other incarnations. So, all is connected with Krishna, all is in the remembrance of Krishna. But is it like primary, secondary names, then the difference?
Yeah. Yeah. When you connect personality, then you're getting the absolute principle of remembrance. So if you remember Krishna in a certain quality or certain aspect of his nature, that is the absolute principle of remembrance. Whether you remember him as Nrisingadev or Ram or something. As long as the personality is there. But if you just remember an aspect of his nature, such as you said, you know, a sloka from Bhagavad Gita. That's nice, that's a feature of knowledge, but then again, and you could connect it to Krishna in the sense that Krishna spoke it. So if you're thinking of that verse in relationship to the speaker, then that's absolute. If you make a distinction between the verse and the speaker, then you're taking the absolute principle and getting something less from it. As soon as you cut off the personality in any aspect of his energies, and then you become somewhat impersonal or less personal. Connect everything back to the source.
In connection with this, there are names like, say, Yashomati Nandan, or Alha Kunji Bihari.
Mm-hmm.
So they evoke the idea of personality more clearly,
yeah,
than just the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, because we tend to repeat it so many times,
yeah,
that it becomes mechanical.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is a prescribed mantra. So how do we try to connect the personality with this name? Because other names that they need to be vivid.
But you can't reveal, you can't realize Radha Kunja Vihari unless you chant Hare Krishna. Because through the name, the rupa, the forms of the Lord are coming. Otherwise, it's just a name, Radha Kunja Vihari. There's no real connection or feeling there. It's just a name. When we chant the name, then the name reveals those aspects of the absolute truth that are designated as his rupas. When you think of Radha Gunjana Vihara, you think with affection or with devotion or some relationship there, or even Radha Madhava or Radha Govinda immediately invokes a certain, what we say, thought within the mind. You think of the deity in that way. But without chanting the name, really, there's not much to it. Because the name is the way through everything. Nama and Rupa. From Nam comes Rupa. You approach Rupa without Nam. It's more like it's some sentiment. Just like I know there was a situation where I was in Germany. And one temple president, he called me and he said, Maharaj, we have a problem. I have this pujari. She loves to worship the deity. She does very good devotional service on the altar, but she doesn't chant at all. She won't chant. He said there's 9 processes of devotional service, and Archanam is one of them, and that's the one she's focusing on. And then I remembered the verse in Bhagavatam where Prabhupada writes, each of the other 8 processes must be accompanied by the chanting of the holy name. So I explained that, and I said, ultimately, she won't last. And after some time, he came back to me, he said, Maharaj, she left. Yeah. She gave up her service. He didn't tell her. He was trying to encourage her to chant, but he didn't remove her from her service because she wasn't chanting. But it happened naturally. Krishna kicked her out. Because you can't approach the Lord unless you approach the Lord through the spiritual master. And if you're disobeying the spiritual master's instructions, how can you serve the Lord? It's some sentiment. That's all. And the sentiments don't last, you know, unless they're grounded in, you know, spiritual principles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people may have some, you know, when you say attraction to the deity, but it's actually sentimental. And when they actually chant the holy name, then it becomes devotional. Question in the back there.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you said that the pratishtha is the biggest obstacle for them.
It's the last of all material obstacles. One may get rid of lust and so many other things, but then as one makes advancement, this desire to become famous remains and grows.
Anything will help us to chant attentively.
Hmm?
To become a humble, you say that rendering menial services will help us to become a humble. But sometimes, even rendering while such a services, I do carry such a tendency to be recognized.
Hmm.
So how to destroy this?
You want to be recognized, just Krishna's recognizing you. You can't see it. Do your service nicely with devotion, and you should know in your mind that Krishna is recognizing you. If the people around you don't recognize you, that's good, because you can remain humble, you can remain without pride. But Krishna is taking note. So you're thinking no one's recognizing you, but Krishna is.
By rendering menial services, there is a tendency within me that, okay, if I render such a menial service, then the devotee will recognize me as a humble devotee.
No, then I'm so humble, I'm proud of it. Doesn't work. Can't fool Krishna. Humility is born of natural devotional sentiments, not some cultivation in order to become known as being humble. It's like that. Sometimes we cultivate humility, but then again, we haven't given up our tendency for, you know, pratishtha. And so we think, oh, you know, I'm so humble. Everyone should notice me. If you're humble, then no one should notice you. Because one who's humble doesn't want to be noticed. One who's who's humble doesn't want to be noticed. You were in Tirupati Yatra? Did you come? Did you come to South Indian Yatra also? Or did you hear Radhanath Maharaj's class in Tirupati? No? Talking about the salt. The quality of a Vaishnava is like salt. The salt makes the difference in the preparation, but the salt remains hidden. If Krishna wants to glorify you and put you in front, that's his business. But you shouldn't be so eager for that. Why? Because in our conditional stage, we still are looking for something, some reciprocation. But in the higher stages of devotional service, we're satisfied simply by service. We look forward just to serve. That's all. How can I serve? The service itself is what satisfies. So we may not be on that platform yet. But anyway, still you get prasadam. So there's some remuneration. But generally, the principle is we're serving. We're serving. We have to serve anyway. In the material world, people are serving in order to get something. So as long as we're trying to get something from our service, it's not pure devotional service. It's mixed. Serve for the sake of serving. Serve to please. That's, you know, if we can't jump up to that platform, then at least aspire to be like that. I'm not on that platform. I still have some tendencies for recognition, for material remuneration. And they're still there, but I aspire to get rid of them. And then in due course of time, they'll be gone if you're working hard. Whatever you want, if you want something bad enough, if you simply focus on that, you can be successful. You want to be a great preacher? You can do it. All you have to do is study these books carefully and use and look for every opportunity to preach, and you'll become a great preacher. You focus on that. Read and study and preach whenever you get an opportunity, and you become a preacher. You want to be a good cook, and you associate with the cooks, watch how they cook, stay in the kitchen, learn the preps, practice, and you become a good cook after a while. You want to be a good pujari, learn the rules and regulations of pujari work, associate with pujaris, and take the opportunity when it comes to practice. So whatever you want to do, you can just have to focus on. You want to become humble? Practice humility. And practice to get rid of these desires that are contrary. One of the features of a devotee is intelligent. He sees not only what is to be done, but what is to avoid. Therefore, Prabhupada used to say, we cultivate knowledge and nescience side by side. Nescience means those things that are of the immaterial energy. We have to know what is ignorance and how to avoid it. Because we can accept ignorance for knowledge if we don't know what it is. So you might be thinking, to be recognized is good because it makes me happy, and if I'm happy, I can do more service. So I should be recognized. But actually it's not. Your happiness doesn't come by getting recognition. Your happiness comes by pleasing the Lord. When Krishna is pleased, and when the Vaishnavas are pleased, then you become happy. And then you can remain enthusiastic in your service, not by getting some recognition. If you get recognition, that's nice. Don't run from it, but at the same time, don't look for it either. Okay, whatever you say. You have a question? He has a question. Let him. I know. But he wants to ask a question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I know.
You have just said that impersonal is given after attaining liberation, they fall down because their desire is still there. I heard earlier also, but to me it's not very clear, because liberation living entity, when you are enjoying a state of full, total liberation, but because of their desire, free to exercise their will to desire, enjoy separate from the Lord, and that was the desire to made him under, come under bondage. So, and accordingly, a lot of contaminations have come. So like that mirror was having a lot of contaminations, and Shedu Dharpa Namal Janam was trained the other day. So when such a bondage, a state of bondage is there, from that state to liberation, until such time total contaminations, including the desires, totally eradicated, the question of liberation is not there. So once such a liberation is attained, it we always thought that the living entity has been totally free from all sorts of contamination of the material existence. So when such a liberation is attained, there is no question of any fall down. So that is not very clear to me, if you can kindly explain. Because impersonalists, I also understand that they always claim that they are aiming for liberation, but that to me is not a liberation. They might first be aiming for Brahman realization.
Yeah.
So that, according to the, from that platform, they can fall down.
Yeah.
But there is a difference between Brahman realization and state of liberation. Once someone is liberated, leaving this material existence and going to the spiritual world, once someone goes there, there is no question of coming back, even taking any of these five liberations.
Yeah, well, not the fifth one.
Fifth one?
The fifth one, yeah, not the sixth one. Sixth one is the impersonalists. They don't develop the other five, they develop Sahujya Mukti.
So,
yeah, or two aspects of merging. Merging,
but that is a spiritual world. If that is spiritual world, nobody can live this material existence until even a trace of contamination is there with him. He cannot go. Once he goes there, he's
but then, if he doesn't take up bhakti, he falls down.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They can attain this first two parts of eternal,
yeah.
Satchit, Anand, bhakti.
They can't get Ananda.
Such time one comes to the level of devotional service.
Yeah, which is the principle of Ananda. Yeah, there the verse is there. Yene ravinda rivukshamaninam nasta avabhuda sudaya aruna krichchena padam padam padantiyadam nandarsir du usma ahangrayaha. Lord Brahma is speaking this verse. Whereas those impersonalists, they climb very high on the spiritual platform and they actually think themselves liberated, but actually they fall down again. Why? Padantiyata. Why? Because avasuda buddhaya. That means their intelligence remains impure. Why? Because the principle is they don't take up service to the Lord. Unless one engages in devotional service, any position, even the highest stage of liberation, is temporary. Therefore, the Brahma, those who get Brahma-Bhuta, or liberation on the Brahman platform, they can go to the spiritual world if they take up devotional service. But if they don't, then they fall down.
They may fall down from that platform of Brahman realization,
yeah.
Brahma-Bhuta state.
Yeah.
Not that liberation state. There is a difference.
That's also liberation.
That Brahman realization.
Yeah.
So they have the material body, at the, while being in the material body,
no.
They understand that Vidya part and...
No, that is called Sahujya Mukti. That's a form of liberation. That's merging into the body of the Lord. Merging into.
Prabhupada says the impersonalist, be he a jnani or a yogi for that matter, they will never be able to attain liberation until such time they come to a devotional platform.
Prabhu, you're wrong. You're missing one point. The point is that there is called Sahujya Mukti. Sahujya Mukti is the liberation attained by the impersonalists and by the demons.
By the
demons. The demons get Sahujya Mukti when they're killed by Krishna. Just like Agasura, he got Sahujya Mukti. Agasura was a demon. Yeah, it's called Sahujya Mukti. Mukti means liberation. That means no more connection with the material energy. They merge into the body of the Lord. They merge into the body effulgence of the Lord. These are two forms of Sahujya Mukti. But they are not the stage of the liberation that comes by way of bhakti. Sarshti, Samipya, Sarokya, Sarupya. And what is the other one? Samipya, yes. These five forms of liberation are those features that come by way of bhakti.
Yeah.
Then they don't fall down.
But impersonally, they don't have to come to devotional service to get these five types, any of these five types, no?
Yes, they do. They have to go through
then
devotion.
They don't fall down.
Then they don't fall down. Then they're not impersonal anymore. Yeah, so Huja Mukti. Read about it. It's in Nectar of Devotion. It's explained. Sahuja Mukti. Demons get it, impersonalists get it, Mayavadis get it, even Jewish housewives can get it. So many people can get it. But the point is, there's no devotional service. Avasuddha Buddhaya, as long as one doesn't serve the Lord, then they fall down. Padantiyada, that's the verse. It's in the 10th canto. What's the verse? 10. Well, that is
the state of Brahman realization.
Oh, yeah. That is Brahman.
That's not the liberation. They still hold the material body, not the impersonalist.
So what is your point?
Point is that they really do not provoke liberation. That is what I am trying to say. Until such time they surrender to Lord Krishna,
yeah,
and accept the devotional service.
Yeah.
And once they do so,
yeah,
there is no question of falling down. That's
yeah,
what I'm trying to say.
That's the liberation that doesn't make you fall down again.
Yeah.
But then there is a kind of liberation in which you do fall down. Just like if you go to sleep, you have to wake up. Don't neglect this other form of liberation. It's mentioned in the scriptures. It's called Sahuja Mukti. Mukti doesn't mean almost liberation, it means liberation. They are free from the material entanglement, but because they don't go to the next stage. If you go to school and you go to the first grade, second grade, and then you stop and you say, I'm finished. No, you have to keep going. So there's an opportunity for the impersonalist to go from that stage to the next stage. What happened to the four Kumaras? The four Kumaras were Brahmavadis. They had Brahman realization, but not Paramatma, but not Bhagavan realization. As soon as they smelled the lotus feet of the Lord mixed with the tulsis and sandalwood, they came to the stage of Bhagavan realization. Whereas, what is the other example? Sukadeva Goswami also. So, but those who attain liberation but do not come to the next stage, they fall down again. They have Brahman realization. There are many impersonalists who have realized themselves as not this body. They have realized, I am not this body. You can't take that away from them. Yeah, the knowledge. They've realized Sat and Chit, but no Ananda. And without Ananda, down again. You have to go down. You have to have Ananda. Ananda is life. They don't have Ananda. They have knowledge. And you can't love your knowledge. Love is the principle of existence. Love means Krishna. They remain envious. They want to be God. So God gives them some chance. It's still a form of liberation. Don't scratch that out. You can't change the scriptures. It is. Well, you're wrong. No, it is liberation. Yes, yes.
But they still hold the material body, no?
Well,
that is what I was thinking. When they bring Brahman realization, they hold the material body with that full knowledge, theoretical knowledge that they are not the material body and they are the spirit soul and they are free from material attachments and all that. But since they're in the still body, their desire, hidden desires, remain.
Yeah.
Sometimes it comes up and they fall down.
Yeah.
So that was what I was thinking.
But they're not bound by their material body. They may have a material body, but they're not bound by it. Anyway, I'm not giving credit to them. I'm just telling you what this philosophy is, that's all.
I was thinking anybody liberated never falls down. That was my impression.
Then read that verse. Yena vinvaksa vibuktamanyas. Well, Tvavasta Buddha of a Tvavasta? Bhava Avasuda Buddha Aruna Krichchena Padam Padam Padanti Ada Padanti Ada. They fall down. Padanti Ada means fall down again. Why? Because they have their Avasuda Buddhaya. Lord Brahma is speaking this verse. Right.
That criteria not being met, they cannot go over. So that is what I was thinking.
Yeah, they're not going any farther. But they're farther than the materialists. They're better. They're better than the karmis. They're better than the karmis.
They cannot leave this material world. That is what I was thinking.
They leave, but they go back. Just like if you go to sleep, you have to wake up. Yeah. Yes. It's temporary. Yeah. Maybe I should have took the question. Anyway, thank you for your discussion. I hope you're clear now, huh? Okay. I'm getting clarified and purified. Clarified beyond butter is purified butter. I mean, Agasura, he's a demon, but he got liberation. Putana, Putana got liberation. She's a witch. Kacheri witch, very fierce witch. She got liberation. In what way Ajamil chanted offenselessly? Because while he was chanting, he was, one, attached to his son, which is a material attachment. Two, he was inattentive while chanting, which falls into the category of offense number 10 and 11. Obviously, he has some problem with that pastime. It's like that Brahmin who, when he read that verse, Yoga Shema Vamyaham, he crossed it out. It's not right. Some mistake in the scriptures. Well, it's explained by Srila Prabhupada. When he chanted the name of Narayan, as soon as he called Narayan in his helpless state, he remembered Krishna as Narayan. He remembered Narayan. He was calling his son, but then when he heard himself call, that sound brought back remembrance of Narayan. It happened simultaneously. He was thinking son, but as soon as he called, then he called with such helplessness, the name of Narayan came. That was the Lord's mercy. So in one sense, he was calling from material attachments. But because somehow or other he remembered Krishna, even though he was calling in that way, he was somehow or other, he chanted what we say, Namabhas. He got free from reaction. He was inattentive while chanting. That's hard to say whether he was or not. Of course he was chanting the names of his son. But then again, he remembered Narayan. He remembered the Lord. Okay. Should we stop here? Is there any more challenging questions? It's actually, these are the best ones. Because they help become...
Sorry,
Maharaj. No, it's very good. I really enjoyed your discussion. It helped me. It's good practice. I became... clarified and purified too. Prabhupada would love
it. It was worrying me most of the time that every time I hear that they fall down after attaining liberation, that is what was puzzling me. How is it possible?
You're okay? You're okay now? If you're okay now, then it's successful. If you're not, then we still have to discuss more. Prabhupada would love to discuss challenging points. So it's good to have some discussions like this. Makes you stronger in devotional service. So we should have debates. Okay. No, thank you. It was good. But the point is, mukti, sahuja mukti is mukti. Yeah, and not desirable by devotees. Okay, so we can stop here. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.